November 24th, 2015. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hassenflow.
And we're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. Day after tomorrow, Chip, it's Turkey Day.
Thanksgiving.
No. Turkey Day.
Thanksgiving.
Turkey Day.
Thanksgiving in the U.S.
Mystery Science Theater 3000 does a 12-hour marathon of the worst movies they can find, and they call it Turkey Day.
Well, okay. Enjoy that.
I will. Believe me, I will. You can watch your football games all you want. I am going to be sitting down and watching Mystery Science Theater.
I'm going to be spending time with my family and watching football games.
My family will be there.
Maybe I'll watch a little bit of this.
It's great. It's a tradition. This is a holiday tradition. We all have our holiday traditions. This is one of them. Joel has put together yet another list of six movies that he's going to show us one after the other with introductions. New, fresh introductions. Quite possibly including the new cast of the new Mystery Science Theater 3000.
How do you watch this? Are you going to watch it through an app?
Yeah, this is through Shout Factory. That's the company that has been distributing Mystery Science Theater for the last 15 years or whatever mm-hmm. it's been since it went off the air. And yeah, this will be on a computer. I might plug it into one of my sister's TVs at her house. She's full of TVs, let's put it that way.
Okay. Okay. Have fun.
Oh, I will. I will. Then the wife will leave and go out to Black Friday shopping, and I will sit and watch Mystery Science Theater 3000. Sounds like my life. Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week, and you and I both separately sat down and watched all 13 hours of Marvel's Jessica Jones on Netflix this weekend.
That was a lot of Doritos and Mountain Dew right there.
Yeah. It was. So, tell me, first line, what is your impression of Jessica Jones?
They did a good job.
I loved it.
I'm not going to go that far. You can say you loved it.
I
will say it was very capable and did a very good job at it. But I think this is not for everybody.
That's true. That is a great point. This is not a Marvel children's program. This is a comic that was meant for adults, that made into a TV show that's meant for adults.
Well, that's a good point. My wife sat down, she started watching it with me, and then immediately left. This certainly wasn't her going to be something she was going to be able to get through.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of it is because of the style of storytelling. It's a noir type of story. There's bad things that happen.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of grown-up situations.
Every kind of sexual relationship that could be expressed was expressed in this series in one way or another. Found it very interesting.
Well, and I agree. If you enjoy the Daredevil series, this is definitely something you should check out. It certainly is, while it's not a part two.
No.
This takes place in the same neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. Hell's Kitchen, New York.
There's some differences as far as the color palette they chose, where Daredevil definitely had some red and some things of that nature.
And so dark, because we were dealing with a blind character. This is not that darkness, but there is a lot of darkness here.
Well, you end up going through, I think, a blue filter, maybe, mm-hmm. what it is. The color palette is based from the comic, by the way, with purples and blues and things of that nature. Jessica Jones is this hard-drinking woman
mm-hmm.
who is a private investigator who's kind of a... While she is a superhero in the sense that she has some powers, that certainly is not the main part of the story.
Right. The main part of the story is she's a damaged character. She has been hurt by this purple man.
Well, Kilgrave. That's mm-hmm. right. And he is a bad, bad guy.
He is.
We eventually learn how his powers work. His powers work very... If I walked into the room and I said, hey, get me a cup of coffee or something, you would immediately go get you a cup of coffee. Well, you can immediately see how this could be twisted and turned. We through the Alpha series, we learn a little bit from our past. While this... Probably the best part of this, there's no origin story.
Right.
That, you know, you end up learning a little bit from her past, but there's no like, well, this accident happened.
Right.
And because this accident happened, this happened.
I mean, other than the storyline necessities of it, how did she come to be a part of this other family? Those origin parts are in there, but not specifics to her powers or really to his powers. That's a little more specific to his powers.
We eventually meet this guy named Luke Cage.
Mm-hmm.
Luke Cage is a Power Man from back in the 70s. He was, I'm going to use a word, blaxploitation character.
Right.
Definitely back in the 70s when he was released, if you read his conversations at that time, obviously you would be kind of horrified, because it was definitely jiving and lots of slang. Mm-hmm. And one of the nice things they threw in there a few times is his comment, "Sweet Christmas."
That's right. That's his catchphrase.
Which, from that time, which means nothing.
No, right.
But he says it a couple times, uh-huh. and each time you catch it, you go, oh, this is... Oh, how funny. How funny. But they have a relationship, and there's...
Very quickly. I was really thrown by how quickly they were into a relationship in this show. Very first episode.
Well, I don't know if I was, because, you know, Jessica Jones is known to kind of go after what she wants.
I guess.
And I don't think that, you know, that really meant that much to her. She definitely has... an easygoing way around about her. When she chooses to do something, she certainly is not a person living with that type of regret.
Mm-hmm.
Although she's, because of the experience she had with Kilgrave, she's got, you can just feel the weight of that and yeah. the guilt from that.
And the PTSD that's mentioned in that first episode, too. She is dealing with this mental issue that she has.
Part of one of the challenges, ultimately, I have with it, and where I... There's a few leaps of logic in the story. You'll immediately run across them and go, okay, it just doesn't make sense. But the other thing is that she's not necessarily a good private investigator.
Right.
I don't mean that she's willing. She can find her stuff. But some of the things that she ultimately ends up doing, especially to Kilgrave, are just illegal. It's an evil thing, a bad thing. She tortures him.
Yeah, she really does. And that's because she was scarred by what he did to her, and she is... playing that victim, lashing out at the assailant here.
And the leaps of logic that you go through also are, you know, all these things, events happening around her, that she is not arrested at some point, that she's not charged. I mean, she should be behind bars.
Yeah, she was. She was brought in a few times in the series.
Yeah,
but
why would they let her out? I mean, it just seems so strange.
Right. It's a good story. I really enjoyed it. I'm trying not to describe it in terms of Daredevil. I don't want to compare the two. They are two very separate stories, even though they are certainly going to be connected. They are two different types of shows.
Well, what they carry that is the same writer. I shouldn't say the writer, because the writer of the series, the same source material.
Right.
They're both based on Brian Michael Bendis's work from 15 years ago or so, maybe a little bit longer, which we'll discuss a little bit later. But Bendis was the anchor. He came in and took over Daredevil. And because of his noir storytelling, was given the opportunity to create this character named Jessica Jones. They share this wonderful dialogues and storytelling. If a person had read the Jessica Jones comics, the Alias comics, the Kilgrave story is only, or the Purple Man, is only a very small part of that, but they definitely got the feeling, the atmosphere of this story very well. The other thing I'll mention on this is the theme song that introduced the mm-hmm. story, probably the best of the Marvel theme songs. I can't even think of one in my head from any of the Marvel movies, but this one definitely had a kind of a light poppy,
yeah, that
jazzy,
that PI kind of Dashiell Hammett, Maltese Falcon sort of storyline music. It fit really well, no doubt about that. I did call into Chord Killers this week and talk about theme songs. Did I tell you about that?
No.
Yeah, we were featured on episode of Chord Killers this week talking about theme songs.
Well, what we should mention from this is that next year, it looks like we're going to be getting Daredevil 2, Season 2.
I am ready.
And we're also going to get Luke Cage. And Luke Cage was a big part of this, the Jessica Jones series. And we have thoughts that there's going to be an Iron Fist, a Danny Rand series.
It is possible.
But it hasn't been greenlit yet. I think from what I'm reading, they're really struggling on what type of character. This character has a fist that's got kind of a magical power.
Okay.
That they're trying to figure out how that's going to fit in this genre, this world, this dark world. I want to also mention that we're seeing the divide right now between the ABC S.H.I.E.L.D. series and the Marvel movie series and the Netflix series. The Netflix series seems to be based off of stuff that is aimed towards adults, grown-ups, where the S.H.I.E.L.D. and the Marvel movies are definitely going that Star Wars audience, that, you know, 12-year-old to 15-year-old, that that this demographic. Daredevil and Jessica Jones are aimed at the old guys.
Yep. Right. And they got us. There was no doubt about it. I also sat down. It must be winter binge season. We got 8 inches of snow on Friday, so I just sat down and watched TV all weekend. I have also sat through all four episodes so far of the Ash vs. Evil Dead series. I know you don't have any interest in this one at all.
I don't. Okay. I don't. Tell me about it.
No. You don't. I'm not going to tell you about something that's not of any interest to you.
It may be of interest to someone. I'm sure there's plenty of people who are watching it and enjoying it.
Those of you who love Ash and the Evil Dead and the Army of Darkness and the Boomstick, I'm sure you're watching Ash vs. the Evil Dead on Stars. If you're not, get your $10. Hand it over to Stars. This is another one of those $10 a month sort of things. It's an add-on to cable, so I had to go over to a buddy's house to watch it, but it was well worth it. The other one that's really something is The Man in the High Castle, which they showed us all 10 episodes of that. This is an Amazon original, so those of you who are Amazon Prime members, if you're not an Amazon Prime member, you can get 30 days for free going to our amazon.toomuchscrolling.com. This is a Philip K. Dick story made into a miniseries, 10 episodes, and it's the Sliders episode where the World War II was won by the Germans, and Hitler invaded the United States, and three-quarters of the United States is occupied by the Reich, and then a quarter is occupied by the Japanese.
This sounds interesting. I may check out. I tend to not watch a lot of television, and, you know, with the cold months, and this seems like it'd be an interesting, you know, thought experiment, and to see how it would play out.
I think that's exactly why they released it now, because exactly that. We are entering those cold months. It's time to sit down and maybe watch 10 hours of an interesting movie.
And that one's available through Amazon Prime, so like a Fire Stick, or you can watch it on your computer.
Or on just about any other device. I've got it on my iPhone. It's great.
Okay.
Get yourself a Prime membership, especially through our website. Opening this week in the theaters, we got The Good Dinosaur. This is the next Pixar movie. We all love our Pixar movies, and this is the next one.
Pixar seems to hit 1,000. I mean, they certainly, very few movies you would say they're not very good.
Cars 2.
All right, there you go. In fact, I don't think I saw Cars 2.
Yeah, not many people did.
Well, anyway, The Good Dinosaur is a world where the meteor sort of misses wiping out the dinosaurs. They seem to have survived. And humans are surviving, are around them, and evolving around them.
Yeah, the evolution of man alongside the evolution of dinosaur. It's there's a lot of people out there who are going, ooh, I knew that this was going to be true.
Well, what looks interesting is that the human walks on all fours and is sort of the dog of the character.
Yeah, acts like a dog, does not speak, where the dinosaurs do speak, and they have an evolved language that they use. And it'll be very interesting to see this one. It's going to make a lot of money, I know that much.
It is. And this is the first of the Pixar films, and my daughters are getting older, where I said, hey, would you like to go see this? And they said, no. And so I may end up having to drag them to go see it. Oh, let's go do something.
Time to get some younger cousins to go, that's for sure. Yeah, we adults, we have to go see these movies sometimes, and they're awful. And sometimes they're wonderful. We want so desperately to see them, and we have teenagers, and they,
Well, eventually they come back around.
That's
but,
right.
But these Pixar seems to make universal stories. It doesn't matter which age group.
Oh, yeah. They're great at that. Another movie that you found, this is a documentary. This is Hitchcock / Truffaut. Is the story of Francois Truffaut interviewing Alfred Hitchcock about all of his amazing movies and the skill that he took putting these movies together.
Okay, so this movie does not open today. This movie opens next Tuesday after Thanksgiving.
Interesting.
So when our next show comes out. But it opens up that Tuesday. It's based on a set of interviews that were taking place in front of a camera. They've put it together into a documentary. Truffaut is basically interviewing Hitchcock and questioning, why did you make these scenes? How are you looking at this? You're getting an inside view of a master storyteller with an interesting view of things.
Two master storytellers. Truffaut is a really well-known director. His big film was The 400 Blows. He's okay. A French director, so you might not know him as well. But yeah, the two of them sitting down together, this is a very interesting documentary.
Well, if you could interview Kubrick, if you could interview Scorsese, you know, what you end up doing is getting inside the mind of just a person who's changed Orson Welles, changed storytelling. I'm looking forward to this. This will be something I will actively look out. I don't know where it's going to play. Art House Theater or something like that?
Yeah, it's one of those. You put it out in December so that it can get into all of the Oscar-nominated films. This is one of those that I'll definitely catch on iTunes or Apple TV or something.
Well, and I'm going to be looking for it because I'll watch it as soon as I get an opportunity to.
Speaking of movies you'll watch the second you get the opportunity, there's a new version of Frankenstein. This one's called Victor Frankenstein, and I love Frankenstein.
All right, we were putting together a list of movies being released this week. There's three big ones.
Uh-huh.
And of all the three, The Good Dinosaur, I was like, oh, we'll see that. This one I had no interest in seeing until I saw the trailer for it.
Yeah, it's a great trailer.
And listen,
trailer.
If they twisted your arm and said you have to go see it, I don't know if you're going to be disappointed because it's got a good cast.
It reminds me of the remake of Sherlock Holmes that came out a few years ago with Robert Downey Jr. It's got that feeling to it. Not exactly a Guy Ritchie, but very similar.
I don't disagree. I think you hit it right there. It's got a great cast. It's got Daniel Radcliffe. So, you know Harry Potter stuff's going to be in.
As Igor.
Oh, yes.
How interesting to cast somebody like that just to be making facial expressions in the background. He's not limping in the trailer.
Oh, I think it's going to be a new modern view. Probably steampunkish.
Yeah, a little bit of that. I love Frankenstein. Mary Shelley wrote this book when she was a teenage girl, and it's amazing. It's not the story of a monster. It is the story of a doctor who is trying to cheat death. This story that we've heard so many times before, and it's a very interesting play for a Christmas season to come out right before December.
Well, you've got it.
Instead of October.
I'm sure they thought about Blu-ray when it comes out and things of that nature. And this is from Igor's perspective. So this is not necessarily from Victor Frankenstein's, perspective.
Did you hear that part in the trailer where she says Frankenstein and he goes, no, it's Frankenstein. It's very funny.
I'm looking forward to this also. I will catch this probably when it comes out so I can rent it or Netflix or something.
Yeah, I'll probably make it to the theater to watch this one. I am a big fan of Frankenstein. I've seen every Frankenstein movie that has ever been put out. I've read so many different books. There's so many bad Frankenstein movies where they think that the focus is the monster. It has almost nothing to do with the creation. It's the creator. The other one is the sequel,
Rocky 12, I think.
Rocky 12. This one is called Creed.
This time he's coming back. He's coming back as a robot.
This one's called Creed. It is the story of Apollo Creed's son, and Rocky serves as the ring manager,
training
this kid to be a boxer.
So Rocky 1 and Rocky 2 were very good. Then we went into this cartoonish phase of 3 and 4. Mm-hmm. And not that any of these movies were ever bad. And in fact, every time I've seen them, I seem to have been sucked in and enjoy them. I put this on here. I would normally have just dismissed this, but this has gotten such good reviews.
You know, every time a boxing movie comes out, I'm always surprised at how well it plays to the audience. Boxing has this story to it automatically, and it makes for a good movie a lot of the time.
Well, I don't necessarily think it's just boxing. I think it's this franchise. And, you know, Sylvester Stallone won't let it go.
He's almost 70. He's going to let it go pretty soon.
This thing will go on until he's like 90.
Oh,
all of a
boy.
Sudden, all of a sudden he'll just come out and it'll be Creed 12, mm-hmm. because after Rocky keeps going. And then after his passing,
has to fight Mr. T's daughter.
After he passes, it'll be Rocky Fights from the Death. You know, you never know where it's going to go. But anyway, this has gotten good reviews. When you go and you've got these three choices of the new films that have been released, I think they'll each find their audience.
There you go. Brings us to our Appetite or App of the Week. And boy, the Appetite sounds like something we should be talking about in 2 days.
Oh, yes. Maybe have a little dressing on the side.
There you go. You found the Thanksgiving app. This is called StoryCorps, and I hadn't heard about this until you brought it up. It's a great idea about getting that oral history, those stories that we have that we need to collect them, we need to preserve them, getting our grandparents to tell their stories and to put them into a box so that we have them for the future.
Well, it seems to be what the founder has asked for Thanksgiving. And they're working with high school teachers, and he's asking young people to interview grandma and grandpa, or the older generation. In fact, it's the silent generation from World War II that's dying off every day. And basically asking them questions. Anything. What was your past like? You know, how was your youth different than my youth? Did you have apps that you could record these stories?
What was your podcast like?
Exactly. Well, the idea of being able to grab this generation who, you know, at the time where a train was a great big thing, to where they went through airplanes, rocket ships landing on the moon, mm-hmm. coming back, to, you know, a car was super luxury, where so many people have automobiles today, where the houses that we have more than one bathroom. Mm-hmm. You know, when you start talking about how their life changed over that, this young generation may never be able to truly appreciate the poverty that many of them came from.
Mm-hmm.
The other part about it is it gives a sort of a the ability to document it. Obviously, you can use the story app for many, many things, but this seems to be a great place for it to start.
It is. They're calling it the Great Thanksgiving Listen, and it's a great idea. Get with your family. You're going to do that anyway, probably, this weekend. Get them to talk about these stories and so that we don't lose them.
Now, this is not part of the app, but when I found this initially, I posted it to our Facebook page, the Too Much Scrolling page, and underneath it, I put a video that a gentleman did of his grandmother. I think it's a gentleman. And his grandmother is making Depression-era cookies. And she's, you know, taking the flour and the butter and the sugar, and she's measuring it out. And as she's doing it, she's telling the story of her youth. They only had them on Sunday. During the week, they basically had bread and butter and coffee. But on Saturday, they used the little sugar they had to make these cookies. And she's dipping in her coffee and talking about it. You get a real flavor for her youth. And you get some of the little stories. And on the similar note, my before my grandparents passed away, my cousin and father convinced my grandparents to write down some of their memories of growing up. And they have incredible, incredible stories. They did not have enough people to practice football back in the, I guess in the 20s or 30s. So my grandmother played football so they could practice. So they played eight-man football, not even the big part in South Dakota. And so she practiced against the boys. My grandmother loved football, by the way.
Hmm.
And so you get these little stories, you go, wow, I never knew that.
Yeah, that's a great way to spend this holiday and all the holidays. Get them talking. Get it on a recording. Send it, you know, to all the rest of your family. Share those ideas before they're lost.
Sure.
That's a great way to do it. StoryCorps.org. Brings us to our book of the week, and just as you alluded to earlier, we are going to talk all about Brian Michael Bendis and his career at Marvel and all of these great books that he wrote.
Well, we're going to talk about his early career before he got to Marvel.
Oh, even better.
So basically, and I'm going from memory, and I picked up his history a little bit from reading some stuff and stuff that he shared. Bendis is a very witty person. And he was a young guy. He grew up in Cleveland. I think he was very poor at the time. He worked at a comic store, and what he was doing while he was working there was actually drawing and writing his own work. And his work is a very noirish. If we had to go back in time, it would have a very Frank Miller look to it, black and white. Bendis does not draw anymore his own work, but we're going to get, and we're going to briefly talk about his three first stories that he told. He told AKA Goldfish, which if you watch Jessica Jones, there's a scene at the end mm-hmm. where there's something that has goldfish on it. Well, so this is A Private Eye, and you get mm-hmm. to go through his story. And we have Jinx, that's a release. That was 1994. Jinx was released in 97. And then we're going to, I'm actually going to spend a little bit of time talking about, was in 1998, he came out with his book, Torso. And let's go back in time, back in, I think it was 87, we have this movie that came out that was called The Untouchables. The Untouchables was a very hot movie at the time. In fact, a lot of people have watched it many, 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 many times because it has Sean Connery in it.
Look at me now, Bunny Penny.
And it also has Kevin Spacey in a whole...
doing a Kevin Spacey voice.
You're not going to do a Kevin Spacey voice? And Kevin Costner played Elliot Ness. The Untouchables took place here in Chicago. It was basically bringing down Al Capone and the story around that. Hey, guess what happened to Elliot Ness after the movie, after the story?
Oh, I assume he retired.
Well, he moved to Cleveland.
Oh.
And took that same position. And this is a story, a strange, strange story, about a body that washed up on the shore. And it was missing its head, it was missing its arms, and missing its legs. It's called Torso.
Torso.
And it is the story of Elliot Ness dealing with how do you solve this crime. This was based on a true story, just like The Untouchables was based on a true story. I'm sure there's some liberties taken in to tell the story. But Bendis is a gifted person with dialogue. So this definitely has some adult language in it. Bendis at that time, in fact, he still could be known. In fact, Jessica Jones was known for very adult language, which is why it was aimed towards adults. It wasn't aimed towards children. And if you didn't believe that, the first scene in the Jessica Jones story basically will confirm that your kids should not be watching this.
Right.
But anyway, Torso is a very good story. All three of these books... AKA Goldfish, Jinx, and Torso, he documents because they were picked up, or they were trying to pick them up to become movies. And they flew him, and this was before he started working at Marvel. They flew him out to Hollywood, and he's spending his time trying to sell these. Anyway, he documents this in a book called Fortune and Glory, the true Hollywood comic book story. And these stories will make great films. They are going to make good films. In fact, studios have the rights to make them films still today. So my assumption is with the Jessica Jones series and with Daredevil, the series, I have a feeling that they will eventually be either made into miniseries or they'll be made into movies. He has a very good voice for writing. And if I mentioned it earlier, he's got a very gifted voice for dialogue. There's a noir feeling. There's a very dark feeling to them. These are very skilled stories for a young person. And he probably was, I don't know, 18, 19, 20 when he did this, when he wrote these originally. Maybe a little bit older. Ultimately, Bendis right now is a professor. He teaches a writing course at Portland State University. He is the consulting group that has put together the Marvel movies that you'd watch in S.H.I.E.L.D. and Daredevil and Jessica Jones from the Netflix series. If we remember from a few episodes ago, we had talked about this group of people that created the anchors that helped ensure the story was consistent across all boards had been broken off. For the movie, they basically fought and they broke that off. That core group is still putting together the Netflix series. The Marvel movies have a different demographic that they're dealing with. They're dealing with the Star Wars demographic, the, I don't know, 12-year-old to 15-year-old, 16-year-old. Or Steve.
Yeah, whenever you say that, I'm like, but I like Star Wars, Chip.
Well, you can. There's nothing against like them. But
there's no doubt that the new Star Wars movies are based on getting that next generation of people to enjoy this for the future.
Sure, and the idea ultimately is that if you can write the serial stuff for children, that maybe you have your own stories to tell and you can go tell them later on. In fact, we're seeing that movement from a lot of writers also. Mm-hmm. So Mark Brett, in fact, dork40.com, talks about comics or books that are that basically are aimed at more of an adult audience, a grown-up audience, versus, you know, the cape stuff that, mm-hmm. that you see through Marvel or DC or things like that. If you go to a store right now, you'll also notice that the demographics they're going after are much younger. They have taken these characters based on Bendis's work, which was clearly aimed at a person who was much older. Basically, the comic book buyer was, I don't know, 18, 19, 20 to 60. I don't know what age it is. These stories are not to appeal to young people. Well, they said, listen, these are children's characters. They need to be cared as children's characters. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that we don't get Jessica Jones and Daredevil. But what we do, if you liked those two Netflix series, you wanted to read some of Brian Michael Bendis's early work, all four of those books that I mentioned here, highly recommended. They are very skilled. They're going to make great films if they choose to at some point.
And they're all available on Amazon. You go to our Amazon store, amazon.toomuchscrolling.com. We have them in our show notes. You can go there and click on them. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they're good writing.
Oh, fun stuff.
Brings us to our Now the News. The first thing that you put in the news rundown, Chip, is Star Wars.
Well,
Star Wars, Chip.
Steve likes Star Wars, and I like Star Wars,
I'm
too.
Ready. I am so ready for this. We got less than a month to wait for this movie. I am almost to the point where I'm shutting down the internet and not listening to anybody say anything about it. But today, on Kindle, you can get these short stories. They're The Journey to Star Wars, The Force Awakens, just like we reviewed Lost Stars was a novel. These are short stories. These are aimed at ages 8 through 12, but I think that's mental age.
It is mental age.
Yeah.
They're only $1.99 each.
I'm getting them. I'm getting every one of them.
Well, I don't even know how long they are. Maybe they're 10 pages long or so. The ability to sit at grandma's and to kind of go away and read a little bit of Star Wars and get prepared for the movie coming up.
Turn your face away from MST3K Turkey Day for a few minutes and read some short stories. Short stories don't get a lot of press. There's a lot of great short stories out there, and they don't get the same press that a novel gets.
Well, I think this is a test. I mean, there mm-hmm. are many, many tests that Disney is running. And this is a test to see if you're interested, the public is interested. Well, you know, you kind of buy a comic as a serial. You know, you're buying a chapter or so. You know, are you willing to buy a short story to get some background information on these characters? You know, every year or so, J.K. Rowling introduces another, like, background short story. Well, this is along that line. These are very capable writers, and they're going to tell you a little bit. I mean, what do we get? We get something from about Count Dooku in the past that somehow has learning a little about his past could make a play for this movie coming up.
So there are four of them that are being released today. I'm going straight to Amazon when we're done here, and I'm going to pick these up, that's for sure. Uber is so much fun. I was downtown on Sunday. Mm-hmm. I dropped my kids and my wife off to go watch a football game while I went somewhere else. And I went to go pick them up afterwards, and I was in line with all the limos and all the Uber drivers.
How interesting. It makes it very easy. This is an article from the Chicago Law Review. And I shouldn't say it's an article. Maybe it's a paper or something. And the person is very critical of Uber. And the response where I found this was a guy named Mark Perry. And he's an economist. And he said, Uber is really basically good. Uber is very good at eradicating the search costs. You know, going out, calling a taxi. Taxi will be here in 15 to 30 minutes or whatever it is. The ability to call schedule your time to be picked up. Have the person there. Already know what the cost is going to be. Already secure that payment. It seems like the consumer wins, mm-hmm. and also the driver wins.
Yeah, the smartphone has revolutionized our life, and this is one of those ways that it's done it.
And the consumer basically is giving up the uncertainty of when a taxi will arrive. Most cities are not like New York, where you raise your hand and there's a taxi. Chicago can be that way. But even it's taught taxis how to do their job better. Through this disruption, the consumer is getting better service and getting more certainty. And this is happening through all sorts of industries.
And it's just the stepping stone between where we were and the self-driving car. Austin, Texas is getting the Google self-driving car, and officials in Austin are embracing this technology.
Well, it's very Texas to do it this way.
Yes, they are.
Texas likes to make a splash, and they are willing to pay for many of those splashes.
Mm-hmm.
But my favorite part about this story is that the mayor basically took the lobbyist talking points, the Google lobbyist, excuse me, and just basically reiterated, let me be a representative for Google.
Yeah.
Certainly, you would hope that the mayor has his own position on these self-driving cars.
He might not.
But Austin is a very forward-thinking area.
Yes, it is.
It's University of Texas, and obviously the state government is there. But Dell Computers was started there, is headquartered there. There's the Keep Austin Weird scene.
Yeah, they've got Google Fiber is there. We've got Other Worlds Austin coming up next weekend, which is my buddy's sci-fi film festival in Austin, which is huge.
Austin is an area that has lots of driving. The roads are made for driving. You're basically looking at these great big ramps and all the modern ways of, you know, no clover leaves there. You got all the modern ways of making traffic work. This would be a very good area for Google to practice this. And my assumption is that any place that Google Fiber is, Kansas City, Raleigh, will be areas that will first get these self-driving cars. That's what my guess is, and that's strictly just me guessing.
Yeah, innovation is following innovation. That's quite all right. You know, like our language. Our language changes. And the Oxford Dictionary has awarded its word of the year, and it is the emoji for laughing so hard that you're crying.
That is the word of the year.
Word of the year.
So how are you going to look that up in the Oxford Dictionary?
I'm
going to
look under emojis. Is that in the front?
I don't know where it's going to be.
Is it in the back? Is it a pullout in the middle? Is it a centerfold?
I think that's a real challenge with this, picking an emoji as the word of the year. While if you put an emoji into a text, it can usually relay multiple feelings and lots of information.
Picture is worth 1,000 words.
It's still, the ability to search for that seems to be a challenge.
We live with this symbol-based language. All of these squiggles that you've put on the show notes are all squiggles that you've learned over the last 30 to 40 years, maybe 50, and you've learned that this is the way we can communicate. The kids are using these emojis, and they mean things.
Well, I guess if we could figure out a way, if they can search Chinese characters, then
right.
You can search emojis. This seems really odd.
It is.
But I'm obviously, they were looking to make a splash. It's a good way to make a splash.
It's a good way to get it into the podcasts around the world. There's a couple of movie announcements that I'm kind of excited about that are movies that are coming out not this year, but maybe next year. Kenneth Branagh, one of my favorite directors, one of my top five, definitely top five movie directors, is doing a reboot of Murder on the Orient Express. And of course, as Kenneth Branagh tends to do, he will be starring and directing this film.
This is an Agatha Christie book that it's based on, and it's a classic movie that it's based on. It's a remake of that.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if he's going to be able to get the cast equal that he that
oh
they
he's just going to use the same Kenneth Branagh troupe that he's used in every other one of his movies, and they're wonderful.
All right,
the other movie is Top Gun 2. Hey, look, Chip, Top Gun 2.
Should we just leave? We'll just leave it right there. I don't know if we would need to comment anymore.
Val Kilmer is back as Iceman.
Well, he posted to his Facebook page that he was contacted. It's on. So if there's a, you know, I'm not saying that there, I don't know what he can play.
I don't know either.
Military personnel have to have a certain body type, and older gentlemen typically we tend to follow the Santa Claus group.
Oh boy.
So I don't know what they're going to do. So Val's going to be in this movie. He's going to probably be some kind of civilian employee at this point.
You know what I'm ready for, though, is a reboot of Real Genius. There's a Val Kilmer movie that I can get behind.
Oh, there you go.
I would love that.
How about Top Secret?
I like that one. But you know what movie I really like, Chip?
I don't know, Steve. What movie do you really like?
You think I'm going to say Star Wars, don't you?
I know you're going to say Star Wars.
The Martian, Chip.
Oh, The Martian.
The Martian is getting a virtual reality experience is the best word I have for it. This is being released through the Galaxy Gear VR, which is a Samsung product powered by the Oculus system. And the Martian VR is going to allow us to experience the key scenes from the Martian movie in virtual reality.
So I'm kind of confused on how this is going to work. Do you have to buy a Samsung unit?
Gear VR was released last week for $99.
Okay.
It is a box that you put your phone into. So you have a Samsung phone, you get a little box to put it into, and you have a virtual reality headset made by Oculus for $99.
Okay, and so you get this, and at that point you can look around the Martian
landscape.
Okay, okay. Mm-hmm. And is this to compete with the Microsoft version of virtual reality?
Well, yeah. Oculus came out first. Oculus is on its third or fourth generation now,
okay,
where the Microsoft HoloLens is still not on the market, will not be for another few months.
Okay.
So Oculus has a head start on them, and they are making some very interesting things between their games and their movie experiences. This is a very unusual movie experience. Most of their movie experiences is the feeling of you sitting in a theater with a group of people without actually leaving your home and going to a theater with a group of people, which, ugh.
Well, this seems like they picked the right movie or a book to be able to pull this from. And The Martian, I mean, not only did the story do well, but the movie did well. What better way to sort of test out your equipment? And $99 seems to be the right price point. If the Apple TV was $99.
Doesn't that seem totally reasonable that if you have a Samsung phone, which my wife does, and I can borrow it from her, and I get a $99 box to put it in, that seems totally reasonable to me for a Christmas present.
Well, it could. It could. I mean, it certainly...
Don't tell her what I got her.
Shh. You mean you somehow avoided all the jewelry? You watch a football game.
Oh!
It's between cars and jewelry and whatever else it is.
Did you watch the football games this weekend?
I did not.
Did you see that the K's Jewelry is selling Star Wars-based jewelry?
Oh, I did see that.
Am I getting louder? I immediately texted all the female people that I know that like Star Wars because I just made their Christmas list.
Well, if you really get down to it, Star Wars is just an advertisement to sell more Star Wars
everything.
Stuff.
Everything. Everything. Star Wars is on everything. I keep walking into stores, and if there's a piece of paper that says Star Wars on it, I go, I could use a piece of paper. I'm loving it. I'm loving all of it. I'm ready for this 30 days of me just really ramping up Star Wars. Star Wars, Chip. Star Wars.
There was the cartoon clip that was the gentleman, he's marking off the calendar. Did you see this one?
Yes, you sent it to me. You put it on the Facebook page. The caption that you put on there was just the word Steve. Yes, I've been using that joke ever since.
And what is he doing? Is he marking off the days until Christmas?
The wife walks in and goes, oh, are you counting down the days to Christmas? That's so cute. And he goes, no. Star Wars. I've been using that joke ever since. There's so many jokes out there. There's so much stuff to find out. You can find out so much stuff. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think, Chip?
Well, maybe we'll gain a few pounds and we can come back next week.
As Val Kilmer. Oh, sorry, Val. If you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more. You can go to our website, TooMuchScrolling.com. You can email us, TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. Give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-4104-TMS. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And every day of the week, you can go to our news site, news.TooMuchScrolling.com. And just talk to your families, get them to record some stuff, call it a podcast. It's the future. Thank you again for tuning into Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflow.
We'll see you in the future.